eating Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new movies Magic Mike's Last Dance, Consecration, Your Place or Mine, She Came from the Woods, and Marvel's Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. I'm also going to be talking about the news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Bubba Ho-Tep on 4K. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The piece of news that I think spurred the most interest from the film community was an announcement this week by AMC Theaters that they are going to be doing a new pricing structure. At least they're going to be test marketing it in certain, they're going to roll it out in big cities and then probably bring it everywhere. And their brilliant design was to say, hey, we don't have enough people in theater, so let's charge them more. That'll get them out to the theater, because all the theaters are now going to assign seats. Every seat is booked individually, so you can buy an actual seat like a concert or a Broadway theater show. They have determined through algorithms where people sit the most frequently, the most popular seats, which are essentially in the middle of the auditorium. People don't like sitting way up close to the screen. A lot of people don't like sitting way in the back. They like sitting right in the middle. And they're like, oh, you can pay for these premium seats and reserve your premium seat. Of course, immediately there was pushback on it. Immediately there was a backlash because people started looking at this saying, wait a minute, the whole point of this was to drive more people to the theaters. You know, look, I've been going to movies my entire life, and I kind of have no choice on a lot of them to go to AMC. That is the predominant movie house in my hometown, although there are other options. It's the most convenient. I'm also a member of their A-List, which allows you 3 movies a week, and it's like $20 a month. It's actually a really good deal if you're going to go to more than 2 movies a month on average. You actually save money, and it covers IMAX stuff and everything. So to me, this is less important because it won't affect the A-List people. It's for people who just go in and buy a ticket. But that's a dumb move. The last thing you want to do if you're having trouble getting people in your doors is to charge them more. That makes no sense. And there was such an easy way around this. Honestly, it was an easy way. If they would have just instituted a general increase in ticket price and put it under the veil of inflation, put it under the veil of they've upgraded all the seats to these really nice leather seats. Half of them are broken now because they've been around for a while, but they've got these nice leather seats. Say you just need to raise everything a little bit and just even do it quietly, just raise your prices like a dollar, which I'm not saying is a great idea, but if they did that and then went around and said, hey, now you can buy lower valued seats for a discount. If you want to sit in the back, if you want to sit up close and sell it that way, and you still get the same effect of raising prices for the center, but it is insane that they think that they're going to drive more people to the theater by making them spend more. Also, what's going to stop people for a movie that's not full from buying a seat in a lower tiered section and then just going and sitting in the good seats? I mean, sure, if it's a crowded Friday night and everybody's in the theater and they're it's sold out, yeah, you're going to need to have your own seat. But I go to movies all the time at non-Friday or Saturday nights, and, you know, you go to a movie on a Wednesday, you know, you may have an empty theater. I've gone to theaters and routinely not sat in the seat that I bought because I want to be in the corner, I want to be in the back, or sometimes I take the handicap seats because no one's there, and they're kind of in the middle, and very few people reserve those because you can get booted if it's a full show and somebody comes in with a wheelchair. My father had a wheelchair. I had brought him into movies sometimes and had to utilize those seats. So this was just a dumb move on AMC. And then they got people like celebrities, like Elijah Wood came out against them saying, this is dumb. And it was. So this is a big bust on AMC. They haven't even started it yet, and it's a big bust. It's just going to make people not go to the theater more. The other piece of news I want to talk about as a sad piece of news is Burt Bacharach, who I don't know if a lot of people in the younger generations even know who Burt Bacharach is, but I mean, he was a legend in the music world, and he passed away this week. He was 94. He's one of those people that you're like, wait a minute, he was still alive? He wrote so many hits over the years, not just pop hits like I'm Never Gonna Fall in Love Again or Magic Moments or something like that. But he also did movie soundtracks and he did movie songs. Like he won an Oscar for his score for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And he also won an Oscar for Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, which is from that movie. Now, if you listen to his songs, they all have a very similar, easy listening feel to them. And that's kind of what his shtick was. That was his brand. But this guy managed to stay relevant for decades, not just in the 50s and 60s. You know, like he did the Casino Royale soundtrack, which is a goofy, fun, kind of wacky 60s soundtrack. But, you know, he was even popular in the 90s. Part of it is because there was a throwback sensation then. But he had people like Elvis Costello and the White Stripes and R.E.M. were fans of his. Mike Myers gave him a cameo in a couple of his Austin Powers movies. So, I mean, this guy is a legend in music, and he is going to be missed. He's one of those soundtrack of our lives type people. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is, actually, it's not really a trailer for an upcoming movie. It's a trailer for a trailer, and it's for Fast X, which is coming to theaters on May 19th. This is actually a trailer for people to be excited about watching the Super Bowl spot that's going to be out this weekend.
Dumb. Your family is about to go up against the only thing they can't handle. You.
You want to see the old guy?
Watch.
I don't know why he's doing this. I don't give up on him so easy.
Let's go!
Here they come.
Now it's my turn.
I think it's just funny kind of looking back. This was the Fate of the Furious. I think this was not the last Fast and Furious movie. It was the one right before it. But this one was bonkers, where they're like going after a submarine with a Lamborghini and had Charlize Theron as the bad guy. And this just reminds you how insane these movies are when you watch a trailer like this. And then in the next one, they go to space, quite literally go to space. And so it's fun to revisit this, although I can't imagine where this series is going, because they're not going to stop making them. I mean, these movies make tons of money. It just prints money. So if you're excited to see Fast X, which sounds like an Alka-Seltzer alternative, you can watch the big game this week and watch the Super Bowl and see the Fast X spot. The next one I want to hit really quickly is History of the World Part 2 on Hulu March 6th.
I'm Kublai Khan.
Amelia Earhart.
The Romanovs.
I am Sigmund Freud. Join me for my masterclass.
Who are you?
Some call me Jesus Christ, Son of God.
Some call him Broken Corny.
We are about to embark on the biggest campaign in the history of the world, part two.
Noah, you were supposed to get two of every animal.
I got two chihuahuas, two Pekingeses, two pugs. Actually, I got three pugs. Don't tell God.
I am a huge fan of Mel Brooks, and I remember when this movie came out, I was not allowed to see it, because it was like in 1981, well, the first movie, part one, when that came out. And then later I watched it. It's a great movie. I mean, History of the World Part 1 is great and silly. And it's one of those last remnants of that kind of lounge bar comedy that Mel Brooks cut his teeth on. And I love the fact that they're doing a History of the World Part 2, because obviously it makes sense. But it also works to put it on something like Hulu, and it's silly, and it's got people like Wanda Sykes and Nick Kroll involved in it. So, yeah, I mean, this one looks like it's a lot of fun. It's not to be taken seriously, and it's got Mel Brooks behind it. God bless him for being still around and everything. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. It's like a six-night event. They're going to be dropping it on March 6th, and then each day they're going to drop a new episode. So, yeah, looking forward to this one. I got to have some laughs. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about the Netflix film Your Place or Mine and Consecration.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Burt Bacharach.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but everyone.
What the world needs now is love. Breaking news, Manscaped now sells beard products. That's right, they are once again revolutionizing men's grooming with the brand new Beard Hedger Pro Kit. From a beard trim to a fresh shave, the technology behind the Beard Hedger Pro Kit allows you to shape your signature beard look. Now you can finally use Manscaped products to make your drapes match your carpet by going to manscaped.com and using code FATGUYS for 20% off and free shipping. One of the things about using Manscaped is, as great as it is for trimming your underbits, there may be some things you want to do north of the equator. And Manscaped has listened to that, and now they're launching their Beard Hedger Pro Kit. This thing gives you 20 hair cutting lengths, it's got a titanium-coated blade, and it's waterproof so you can shave in the shower so you can avoid getting that hair all over the sink. The titanium-coated blade is tough, and if you get the whole kit, you also get the beard shampoo and conditioner, you get the beard oil, you get the beard balm, and you also get a couple really cool gifts, a beard brush that moves so smoothly, a comb that has great teeth that doesn't snag, and some scissors to do that very, very fine work. So now's your chance to make the top half look as shiny and new as the bottom half. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code FATGUYS. Manscaped Beard Hedger. One stroke, one guard, 20 lengths.
Raindrops are falling on my head. And just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about the one that's on Netflix. That is Your Place or Mine. Lifelong friends swap bi-coastal homes for a week and begin to wonder if they're actually in love.
20 years of friendship. Can you believe it?
How do you still speak to me?
Do you remember the first night we met?
Never stops being weird.
Just so weird.
Cool for school.
Debbie, you need to take a break.
I got an idea. I'm coming to LA for a week. I'm going to look after Jack, and you can stay here.
I don't know.
Let me help.
Taking care of Jack is a lot of work.
I think I got this. Can I tell you something?
Immediately.
The night that Debbie and I spent together, after I found myself thinking about her.
You have to tell her.
It's too late.
This stars Ashton Kutcher and Reese Witherspoon, who actually made news this week by doing the red carpet premiere of this and not putting each other's arm around the other. They like didn't touch each other at all during it. And the whole thing is they said, well, we did that because we didn't want to be accused of having an affair. And I'm like, if that's not the weirdest doth protest too much type of situation that I've ever seen, I'm just wondering if like Mila Kunis was like, look, I didn't like what you guys were doing when you were making the movie, so don't show any affection whatsoever. Anyways, that's all just gossip. The movie itself is meant to be a romantic comedy, but it sort of breaks that mold by using the same technique that I guess you could say that Sleepless in Seattle used, where they never share the screen at the beginning. They don't actually meet up. I mean, they know each other and they talk on the phone, so they do share their screen in a split screen, but they're never in the same room together for the most of the movie, and that's kind of how Sleepless in Seattle works. And while Sleepless in Seattle is a charming movie, and Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks made plenty of great films together, that was not my favorite, and that's the reason why. I'm like, well, it's not much of a love story if they never meet, or at least if all they do is meet at the end. And so this movie, while the characters have a relationship, you feel sort of robbed of any sort of chemistry to it because it's all about them doing other things and then realizing maybe we do love each other. As much as it breaks that mold, it does these weird things as well. Like, she has a son and she's a helicopter parent and she's overbearing on the kid and she's always making his lunch and watching his food and overscheduling him and really hovering. But the kid's like 12 or 13 and I'm like, this kid can make his own lunch. I mean, it's that infantilization of a child that is disturbing in society. And I guess that's sort of like the cliche now. Oh, we got the parent who's all about gluten-free and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, like, that's such a cliche, and it doesn't work in this either. Plus, she has a beautiful house in the Hollywood Hills, and she's like, oh, I'm just a working mom. I'm like, then how do you live in that place? How do you even afford the property tax on a place like that? It doesn't jive with the poor working mother style to it. Then on top of it, when Ashton Kutcher comes over and he's taking care of the kid, because it's that cliche of love interest taking the troubled child under his wing and showing how to do things. But it's really misdirected because it has a strange thing where he's like, I got to get you liked by these jerks at school that ignore him who used to be friends of his. And I'm like, doesn't that send the wrong message? It's like, you need to be friends with these jerks who are kind of a-holes at school. And so he like invites them to a hockey game and buys a booth, which that's super expensive. And then he like says, well, let's have this kid go out for hockey. And of course the kid's good. And I'm like, how did the kid get good at hockey if the mom's a helicopter parent and won't let him play hockey? It sends such the wrong message of you need to be good at sports and that's how you get authentic friends, which is absolutely not true. And how this works. There's so many weird moments in this movie that don't work. There's any scene, like, the scenes work out periodically. I mean, Reese Witherspoon's really kind of cute, and it makes sense as to why she was sort of this rom-com phenom in the 90s and into the 2000s, but this is not a well-constructed movie. It's really a mess. You know, it tries to break the mold of the standard rom-com, but in all the wrong ways, while it's playing into these trite and infuriating cliches. Like I said, the single mom who loves her kid too much, and there's no explanation of why she's got money. And that's the other thing. Can't we just have normal people in these movies? Why does everybody in a rom-com have to be independently wealthy? Well, let's dial it back a little bit and show that they're average people. You don't need to be friends with Ashton Kutcher, who apparently, for some reason, has just loads of cash, and they kind of explain it, but not really. And the movie itself it's a real mess from a script perspective, and the writer and director of it, Anil Barash McKenna, she's well known for doing other major movies. I mean, she wrote, like, The Devil Wears Prada and Morning Glory, so some of these are really nice and well-done films, but she did work on I Don't Know How She Does It with Sarah Jessica Parker. And that makes sense because that one falls in a lot of the same tropes and annoyances that are just not realistic. And it's almost like an alien came down and looked at how a relationship is in movies, but didn't actually examine real relationships in human life. So I don't know. This movie is not well done at all. And I mean, maybe the fan of the standard rom-com would like it, but this thing was just awful for me. I'm going to have to say that. Your Place or Mine sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Consecration. When her brother is found murdered in a Scottish convent, a woman travels there to investigate his death.
I'm here from the Vatican because of your brother's death. I've come to bring transparency to this tragedy.
Before he fell into darkness, he was much loved by everyone.
Fell into darkness? You saw my brother kill himself?
The eyes of God are on us all.
You're a woman of science.
What is it you seek?
My brother was badly hurt before he fell. I think you discovered something that he was afraid of.
I'm a sucker for movies that involve the Catholic Church. I mean, I know I am such an easy mark for that stuff. And horror movies only find Jesus when you have an exorcism movie or the Catholic Church movies. But I love movies like The Exorcist or anything like that where they're fighting these demons. Because the Catholic Church is so organized and they have sort of the demon fighting organization and it goes back years, and so you can use the Latin text and the history of the Vatican. That always just kind of plays into it. And that makes this movie kind of interesting. And Jenna Malone plays the woman, and she actually does a really good job. Very understated performance. I actually think she really knocks it out of the park here. And it gives this really interesting mystery. And you've got like Danny Houston playing the representative from the Vatican. And there's something beyond this. And they have this legend behind this convent and this confessional that people do that ends up in the deaths of some people, but it's well known for that. And you know that there's something creepy going on, and you know that there's something beyond what you're seeing. And there's always that looming presence of evil, and it's shot very well, and it doesn't get overly dark. It has a lot of the dark corners and the dark scenes that are creepy, but it actually is well lit, which is nice to see in a horror movie now and then. But there are elements to the payoff that just seem weirdly convoluted. And I mean, I like a lot of what the movie does. And I think the imagery and the ideas and the thoughts and the concepts behind it are really, really good. I mean, there's some really neat ideas and atmospheric moments, though the story structure's a bit wobbly. It doesn't fit together. It just seems sort of it stumbles as it's going to the finish line, which is not the time you really want to stumble. So it drags at times, and it moves. It has this inconsistent pacing. So the structure isn't as strong as the concepts behind it and the imagery behind it. But that alone makes it worth seeing. So I'm going to say that Consecration kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we've got Magic Mike's Last Dance, and She Came from the Woods.
I'm too sexy for my shirt, too sexy for my shirt, so sexy it hurts.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Magic Mike's Last Dance. After his business went belly up in the pandemic, Mike gets a last shot at dreams when a wealthy benefactor hires him to do a show in London. So let's
dance, Why are you in London?
I'm going to put on a show at this famous theater.
People are numb, disconnected. We're going to wake them up with a wave of passion they've never felt before.
Without further ado, I give you the visionary artist, Magic Mike.
So,
the real question is, why do you love her?
No one's believed in me like your mom has.
First of all, I totally recognize that I am not the target market for the Magic Mike movies. I get that. But what's so funny is what confounded me when the first one came out is how good of reviews it got. Same thing for the sequel. Because I think both movies are kind of garbage. But what people and other critics were saying they loved about the first Magic Mike was, you know, it was a story of this guy following his dreams. And there was a story potential there. I didn't find that interesting or compelling or even well constructed. I thought Channing Tatum had plenty of chemistry. The movie itself made me respect him as an actor more, but the movie itself was just garbage. I mean, I get it. I'm not the target market. It's all for the beefcake value. And I know women love to go see this movie in groups, and it's like, oh, it's empowering to women because it's men dancing for them. Yeah, is it? But okay, but we have the internet for that, don't we? And look, I mean, if women want to go have a good time and see these movies, I'm not going to get in their way unless they want me to. But no, but the thing is, the Magic Mike movies, I think, are insipid and stupid. I think they, while trying to be empowering, they're not equalizing, I guess you can say. Because it, look, if the Magic Mike movies were real empowerment, then men would be watching stripper movies all the time. And to be fair, stripper movies tend not to do well. And when they do well in spite of it being a stripper movie, you know, something like Hustlers, which did pretty decently, but not because it was a stripper movie. It was this sort of almost a crime drama in a lot of ways. But I mean, if Magic Mike was a message of empowerment for women to be just like men, or to at least have the same access to a film like this as men do, then Showgirls and Striptease in the 90s would have been huge blockbusters, and they were not. Look, if it's a girls' night out kind of movie, that's great. But here's the thing. With Magic Mike's Last Gasp, I mean, Magic Mike's Last Dance, this doesn't even work on the beefcake potential. It takes like an hour and a half to really get to the show-stopping numbers. They have like one or two scenes of dancing, but then it weirdly becomes more about dance. It has this pretentious narration in it, which begins with pretentious narration. And I mean, it's like, why do you even add this in there? It's terrible. And then they have the character of Selma Hayek, who, yeah, she's beautiful. And she still looks great for her age, too. I mean, wow. But when she comes to acting, she just screams and yells a lot. It reminds me of how she was in that with the Hitman's Bodyguard's wife, where as attractive as she is to watch, I just can't stand her screeching for 2 hours. And the premise of the movie is beyond absurd. It's like an old Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland musical from the 40s where they're like, let's put on a show, guys. You know, no, yeah, we can do it, you know. And that's essentially what they do. They go into this London theater that she owns, and she's trying to cheese off her husband, who's soon to be ex-husband. And they basically shut down the performance and say, we're going to make our show, and it's going to be this brilliant thing. Oh, we have a month to put it on. I'm like, really? Do you not understand how this works? You're going to, like, write, cast, and choreograph an entire show. I mean, like a movie like Burlesque with Christina Aguilera, that actually is a fun movie because of the dance numbers. And it's a nice little empower. It is an empowerment movie. Now, it's absurd with how much they spend on the productions, but it's sort of like what they did with Flashdance back in the 80s, where the production numbers were way beyond anything that was reasonably being expected. But the movie is, it's pretentious about, we want to make this about passion. And honestly, what I wanted from the movie, I kind of wish that they would have spent all this time building up to this show that was going to change things and break the mold and all that kind of thing, and then have it just be objectively terrible. I mean, I would have loved to have seen, and just have them fail spectacularly, which they kind of do, but they make it, I mean, because the show, there's no reason that show, anyone would care about that show. It's not like it's anything new either. I mean, oh, guys taking their shirt off in a theater production. That's never been done before, ever. It's the movie revels in its own ignorance of itself. And, it's the worst of the series with diminished beefcake values and a nonsensical amateurish plot. It was exhausting to watch, and it's so boring and so long and poorly written. And Steven Soderbergh, you're better than that. So I'm going to have to say Magic Mike's Last Gasp sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about She Came from the Woods. Counselors from a summer camp accidentally resurrect a killer from beyond the grave.
Well, these might be our final moments together this summer at Briarbrook. The fun isn't over yet.
Now we all know the story. 42 years ago, Nurse Agatha gets kicked out of Camp Briarbrook. This eerie calm takes over the forest.
Now I know we've all been trying to bring this hag back for years.
We prick our finger, hold up the sky, and scream her name. Agatha!
Do you think maybe the ritual thing might have caused...
Lauren, she's not real.
There's been a bunch of movies made in the last 10, 15 years that are throwbacks to the 80s. Now, I grew up in the 80s. Weirdly enough, I never saw most of these movies in the theater because when Friday the 13th came out, I was like 8 or 9. I was not very old. I was not old enough to go see the movie. By the time I could pay and go see horror movies or slasher movies in the theaters, I was in the late 80s. So I kind of missed it by about 5 years. But this does pay homage to those 80s slasher movies that I unfortunately am part of that generation but never got to enjoy in the theater. Now, I've since seen a lot of them. I mean, obviously the Friday the 13th movies, The Burning, and they even name-check The Burning in this movie. And it actually does a pretty good job being a nostalgic 80s slasher film, even though I think it takes place in modern times. But they're in a camp setting, so you can reduce and diminish the technology in a camp setting pretty quickly. But, you know, you have all the counselor setup and everything. The characters are a little bit two-dimensional at times. Like, there's one guy who's a counselor, and he's just awful. And now, it's not untold to see a movie from the 80s, like something like Sleepaway Camp. If you've seen Sleepaway Camp, the cook, the guy who cooks the dinners in Sleepaway Camp, who is... you're pretty sure has some sexual charges against him at some point because he is the creepiest guy when the kids get off the bus. But I mean, that was like the 80s, and weirdly that stuff was allowed and people just looked the other way, but you never get that kind of stuff happening nowadays. So this counselor, I don't understand how this counselor, as awful as he is and as date rapey as he is, I don't understand how he was actually permitted to be around children, but you can forgive that because they're working with tropes and the ideas of the genre. But those characters are sometimes almost too cliche and fit too much into a stereotype. But still, I mean, it plays into a slasher movie. The biggest problem I have in this movie is it's about something that happens before, which is obviously, you know, Friday the 13th was based on that. It was about the repercussions of this incident that happened years beforehand. So there was an origin story in the past, but the origin story to this actually looks really kind of interesting. I'd actually kind of rather see a movie about that, but it wouldn't have fit as well into the 80s counselors getting killed type movies that this is paying homage to. It would have felt more like a modern James Wan movie, you know, like The Nun or something like that. But I liked the background story a little bit better than the story for this movie. Still, I mean, to play out as a tribute to 80s slashers, it had to be that flashback type thing. So, I mean, look, I appreciated the nostalgic setting as a genre comfort food, and the slasher elements do work, even if the origin story would have made a better original movie. I'm going to say She Came from the Woods kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Marvel's Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Bubba Hotep. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews and talk about a TV series on Disney Channel. And I think then it's going to Disney Plus. But it's an animated series, and it's made for kids. Probably, I would say this is a tween show, which is why it's on Disney Channel. Because Disney Channel has always sort of cornered that tween market. Disney Plus branched out a little bit more outside of that very narrow demographic. But this one's definitely for the Disney Channel demographic. And it's called Marvel's Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. A teen genius uses her skills to fight supervillains in her neighborhood with the help of her pet dinosaur.
Somebody call the Avengers!
Do they even go below 14th Street?
I've got to fix this. I am the smartest 13-year-old.
And now I have a dinosaur. My brain, your brawn.
We can be superheroes. What do you think?
No.
What?
Not in that outfit.
There's no one else to stick up for the Lower East Side.
You're just a kid?
Are we in over our heads?
You're gonna inspire people, just like you inspired me.
Moon Girl Magic!
I was not aware of this intellectual property before I saw this one, and it's a relatively recent addition to the Marvel Universe. It's sort of like Ms. Marvel, which it plays off of existing characters and that sort of thing, because, you know, Ms. Marvel goes off of the whole Captain Marvel bloodline, so to speak. And Moon Girl and the Devil Dinosaur, there is a Moon Girl comic, and it's aimed at sort of a more urban sort of minority children or, you know, non-white children, not just black kids, but Hispanics, and anybody who is not generally represented by the Wonder Woman or Supergirl image. And this is about just a girl. She's a kind of a teen genius. She's 13 years old, and she's kind of a nerd. Of course, if you're a genius, you're going to be a bit of a nerd. And she's struggling with school and everything, but she gets these superpowers, and she's able to open a portal and get this dinosaur. I mean, it's an over-the-top, insane explanation. But then again, this is a universe with a giant green rage monster and a space god who comes down on a rainbow bridge. So it doesn't mean that crazy things can't happen in the Marvel Universe. Then they like sort of, as you hear in the trailer, they name check the Avengers. But one of the things I've always found interesting about the Marvel properties is they will make entire series about an underrepresented group of people, whether it be by race or by just neighborhood. I mean, take for example, Daredevil. They decided to make Daredevil, and has always been like this in the comics, and he became, of course, a huge hero. But Daredevil serves Hell's Kitchen, which generally doesn't get protected by the superheroes. You know, Tony Stark is not out there doing patrols in Hell's Kitchen. You know, and that's kind of what I really appreciate about the Marvel characters, because it still exists in real cities. Whereas, you know, Superman lives in Metropolis, Batman lives in Gotham, The Flash lives in Central City. All the different DC superheroes live in fake cities, and they make them in real cities, and they put real locations in the backdrop of the Marvel film. So Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur is out there and bizarre, but it's cute and it's empowering. I mean, it's not for everybody. I mean, if you're more than 15 or 16 years old, you're certainly not going to find a lot about this to like. It's definitely a kid's show, and it's made for girls to get an entry into the Marvel Universe. And, you know, fine, you can sit there and complain that that's woke and all, but what's wrong with representing people who are going to watch your stuff? I mean, that's how you get an audience, is you find underrepresented audiences and you cater to them. And that's essentially what this is doing. It's essentially what Ms. Marvel did. And that's a good thing. I mean, that's a smart move by Disney. That's not them being overly political. That's just being smart. It's the same thing with the, I mentioned the Fast and the Furious movies. Part of the reason those movies make such money is because they have a very diverse cast and it takes place in international locations. And then, of course, they make big action movies that you don't actually have to follow the plot to enjoy. But, you know, Marvel's Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, it's cute. I mean, it's a cute alternative animation for middle school girls. I enjoyed it. I probably wouldn't watch much more than a couple episodes, but then again, I'm not a 12-year-old child. So I'm going to have to say Marvel's Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Bubba Hotep. This has got a new 4K release from Shout Factory for the 20th anniversary. Bruce Campbell was younger than me when he made this movie 20 years ago as a 70-some-year-old Elvis. Anyways, years after giving up his real identity, Elvis Presley is in a nursing home where he joins forces with a black JFK to fight a mummy that devours souls.
How could I have gone from the king of rock and roll to this old guy in a rest home?
You were an Elvis impersonator.
You fell off a stage and broke your hip? Who was it? 20 years ago.
That's where they took a piece of my brain. I got a little bag of sand up there now.
Jack, President Kennedy was a white man.
They dyed me this color. What we have here at Shady Rest is an Egyptian soul sucker of some sort.
Some kind of Bubba Hotep.
You know, a mummy hiding out, feeding on the sleeping.
I'm not going to describe how the mummy devours souls because it would get me kicked off the radio. This is a bonkers movie. And what's funny is, it was an interesting story. I interviewed Bruce Campbell 20-some years ago as this was ready to come out. And he described it in the interview as the weirdest script he's ever read. And I misquoted him because it was on the phone and it was garbled and I had printed the worst script. And I promptly got an email back from him and he's like, hey man, I didn't say that. I'm like, oh, sorry. And I had it corrected. But yeah, it's a weird script. It's based on a story, but it's strange. You know, Bruce Campbell plays Elvis in a nursing home, and he still has the hair and he still has the glasses. He's not hiding the fact he's Elvis in this nursing home, but they say, oh, you're just an impersonator. And Ozzie Davis plays the black JFK, which is just, that's even more absurd. And then you have this mummy that there's a reason why there's this mummy in this Texas nursing home. And it's basically sucking out the souls of people, and they're old people, so they don't provide much soul left because they've used most of it. But it's something that the mummy has realized is a feeding ground because it's not strange for somebody to die unexpectedly in a nursing home because it's full of old people. And it's just strange. And when Bruce Campbell's correct, it's one of the weirdest movies you're going to see, but weirdly grounded at the same time. Now, the other thing, I remember more than 20 years ago when Don Coscarelli, who directed this, he did Phantasm and John Dies at the End. And I was at Comic-Con, and I ran into him at a booth. And he was not in a major booth. He was nowhere near the Lord of the Rings booth. He was way, way, way down in the small independent film booths. I mean, it was like a card table, and it just had a poster. And I went crazy over this guy because I love Phantasm. And he was telling me about, oh, yeah, Bubba Hotep. And he's trying to explain it to me. And I'm just like, this doesn't make any sense to me. But I will keep my eye out for him. And then when it came out, I saw it. Back when I saw it 20 years ago, I enjoyed it for the kitsch power that it had. But, you know, going back and rewatching it on 4K, and I watched it with my kids, my two oldest sons, and as we're watching it, when one son says to me, he's like, you know, I was expecting this to be terrible, like Velocipaster. He's like, but this is actually a pretty good movie. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, there's actually real character moments in there, and there's real acting. Oh, sure. Bruce Campbell chews the scenery a bit, and Ozzie Davis has some real fun with his role. But there's some real heart and real definition to the characters in this movie. It's kind of impressive what it does being such a bizarre premise. And it's worth revisiting because it holds up. It's rare for a movie 20 years old to actually keep its impact. I mean, we've seen crazier stuff in the last 20 years. Heck, in 2 weeks, we got a movie called Cocaine Bear coming out in wide release. So they're taking some chances with stuff. But the fact that this movie exists from this era is kind of amazing. And the fact that it holds up as a solid story, not just a horror movie, but as a story, it really says a lot to it. And Shout Factory, they brought it on Blu-ray a while back, and a lot of these the features are in the original Blu-ray, and you, of course you get a copy of the Blu-ray with the 4K, but you've got loads of special features, a bunch of commentaries, of course, with the Don Coscarelli, and you've got Elvis doing the commentary. You got a bunch of behind-the-scenes moments. There's some previously unreleased featurettes about how it performed then and now, sort of a retrospective. It's really a loaded product. There's tons of stuff you can spend. Yeah, you're going to have an hour and a half to watch the movie, but you're going to end up spending probably, 7 or 8 hours going through all the featurettes and everything. I mean, ultimately, Bubba Hotep's a lot of fun. I mean, for as insane as the premise is, this off-kilter horror flick spotlights some great performances and a shockingly insightful story. I'm going to say that Bubba Hotep totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And with that, I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, and Picard Season 3. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.